Three, two, one.
The ideas were there, the foundation is there, and yes, we've made a change, but we haven't killed people. It's not as though we may have devastated them for the moment. They're still part of the family.
We're all about to dive headfirst into Sting's wife's sweaty box. This is Spoilers! I hear Sting can spend 7-8 hours at a time in the box. That's according to his Wikipedia.
Three. That's a three. Strong three.
Tantric?
Yeah.
Is that what it's called? But why would you bring his wife into this?
She directed the movie.
The sweat box?
This is her sweaty box.
Oh, it explains so much.
You guys gave me the
why
worst look.
Why else would Sting be the... one of the focal points of the movie.
Why else would we be doing this pod tonight? We just talked about Emperor's New Groove, and here we are, gathered together again. Talk about the sweatbox. Opening question. Who from the sweatbox would you most want to hang out with? If you could pick one person to hang out with from the movie, who do you think you would vibe with the most? Maybe getting a beer, maybe doing some chair races around the office.
What do you think about going first this week?
I can go first. This is Pappy recording at the head of the table between the two lads.
There we go.
I would want to get a beer with the llama guy. You guys remember the llama guy from the movie? The guy who had... Can you play the clip? This is Llama real quick.
Sure.
Yeah, go ahead.
Now the llama walks so proud. The llama holds his head in the clouds. All along the mountain trail, you're walking like a llama, then you just can't feel.
People watch these films, they say, that's not llama. So you really have to do everything that's archetypal llama.
That's not llama. I love that guy. I love that turn of phrase. That's not llama. He seems fun. I like him. Stevie, you want to go?
Who do I want to hang out with or grab a beer with her in this movie? Was it Schneider and Schumacher?
Yeah. Peter and Tom?
Yeah, I grab a drink with them. They seem pretty intense.
They're crazy.
Seem to have a lot of strong opinions and also don't mind murdering people's dreams.
Dude, that's my favorite part from the opening clip. He's like, Peter's like, we didn't kill anybody, and Tom kind of gives him a look. He's like, well, only emotionally we killed them.
We devastated someone, all right? We didn't, like, kill him.
Not murder.
Yeah, I think those two have a hilarious vibe to each other, which is what makes a good movie and what made this documentary funny, which is the horror on their faces coming out of that initial screening. Mm-hmm. I'd say those two.
Are you guys pretty good with the names of everyone in this movie? Because that's something my first time watching, I feel like I'm going to need guidance through the whole pod.
I think we can piece it together. Yeah.
Who's like the big four. Okay. You can name pretty simply.
Sting.
I am going to say, since he is technically in this movie, Owen Wilson.
Oh, wow.
He was in the initial version.
We're like twins, man.
He was like the 16-year-old... Manka/Costco.
Manco and Cusco.
Cusco. I was going to say it's Costco. Yeah. Manka turned to Cusco, and Owen Wilson was his counterpart initially.
He was the original Pacha.
Mm-hmm.
I've always thought he would be a cool hang.
Owen Wilson.
And... not necessarily Luke Wilson, but Owen Wilson.
Owen Wilson and John Goodman frequently going for the same roles, beating each other out. Traditionally,
Owen Wilson, big ND fan too. Him and Vince Vaughn sometimes.
Owen Wilson has accompanied Vince Vaughn to a couple Notre Dame games. Yeah.
Does he like Notre Dame?
I think he'll go with Vince Vaughn to a game or two.
There you go.
Stevie won't say a hard yes to that. Just,
he's not. You gotta be wearing that stuff in the wild, man. Shane Gillis earns a lot of points with me.
Yeah.
He's not hardcore enough. Owen Wilson does not get on NDNation.com. Does that still exist? ND Nation?
I haven't been on ND Nation since like high school.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay, we're getting in the weeds here, Pappy.
Can I say, my real answer is probably Andres Deja, the animator, or Michael Eisner, who's barely in the movie and makes an appearance.
Is he in it? Amazing. When is he in it?
Michael Eisner walks into a screening at like one of the last screenings of the real movie, and they just pat him on the back and say, "Hey, Mike, glad you're here," that type of thing. You see the back of his head.
See, I feel like you have to be a Disney fanatic to catch some of that stuff.
You can see like the non-hair with the hair on the sides. You can spot it.
Dude, I replied to his tweet so many times and like slid into his DMs, be like, "Can you please come on our podcast?" And I
never get.
Can we talk about alien encounters, please?
Speaking of alien encounters, this movie's wild and weird and out there. Steve, there's nothing quite like it. You know what I mean? Like, there's no view inside the studio quite this
intensive.
Yeah.
You and I have watched a million behind the scenes of all the Disney classics, and you kind of get this cheery look of, well, we didn't do here, so we're going to try this. And it's very upbeat. And then we got this person to be a voice actor, and they were just wonderful. It's very just, even though things may go wrong on those behind the scenes, it's very uplifting. Right? We cut this because it didn't match with the story. And that was always Walt's vision to be about the story. There's a lot of Snow White, especially in those dream sequences where she's dancing. Then you get this movie, which is the most bare bones look you're probably going to get ever, you know, behind the scenes of kind of how gnarly it can get behind the scenes and how most people start off on a ship, don't end up reaching the island with everyone else. It's kind of just throwing people overboard and picking different people up along the way.
And Josh, were you surprised at the documentary quality of this? I know Stevie and I had seen it before, but it's very bare bones. It's like basically an unfinished product in a lot of ways. It's not released anywhere.
Yeah, the last thing you see, or the second to last thing you see, is like a placeholder title.
Yeah,
it should be Sting singing over some graphics, but it was never finished, so it just says, it literally says white text on a black screen, Sting singing over credits.
Yeah,
I was surprised. It is very bare bones. And can we talk a little bit about how we watched this on like internetarchive.com or some shit like that? Like,
yeah.
It has time code running at the bottom of it. I couldn't see most of the titles. It was blocking them.
Which, dumb question, why did that not line up with like the timestamps of the movie? It starts at like an hour.
I was noticing that too. It's pretty.
I think timestamps in editing don't have to be like a timer.
They're always just hard.
It's just like a note for when it was at this mark, do this. It doesn't have to be like the 7 minute mark. It's like the time code mark is different than actual real time.
So even for professionals, timestamps are hard.
I feel like
even for Disney,
yeah,
it's hard to nail them down.
You would prefer it to start at zeros.
Yeah,
I guess, but they didn't.
I drew this little graph. By the way,
we're a work of art.
The sweat box, yeah.
Nolan style.
I'm holding a piece of paper long ways.
Space and time.
Landscape ways for those who do a lot of Excel.
Yeah, landscape style.
And hamburger or hot dog?
Pap dog, right?
It's hamburger, but sure.
And so I was looking at like the structure of the movie. I tried to write down rough time codes. We have a big, huge chunk up to 30 minutes where everything's just kind of hunky-dory. It's the making of. Then you have 18 minutes of pure turmoil for the characters. And then you have like 30 minutes to the end, which are just basically, again, back to a making of movie. And it's like this middle part is by far the most interesting. And I think what people talk about with the sweatbox, but like a decent amount of the beginning of this movie is just what's happening making a Disney movie, right?
You can, part of me, like we call it bare bones. Part of me would say that on a traditional making, we would be seeing so many rough concept art of the actual movie we were going to get.
Mm-hmm.
And you know Disney had creative control over this thing. They were not going to show that original art if they could fight it in any way, shape, or form. So that's why we get a lot of like, usually these things are just filled with, you know, concepts and character designs, originals. And yeah, we get those rough sketches and making of, but they're much more in depth, typically on a standard behind the scenes. That was what was kind of jarring to me, is like, okay, where's the, because like even an animator makes a comment towards the end where he's like, yeah, we're doing the landscapes and the towns, and they have a lot of a little more caricature in them now, they're not as hard lined, and it's like, yeah, they're not going to show those.
Yeah. And Josh, maybe we should, I want to do a mix of talking about the sweatbox as a weird underground documentary that Disney owns, but also telling the story of making Emperor's New Groove. What did you think about Kingdom of the Sun, the initial pitch done by Roger Allers. Allers. The guy who directed Lion King. Seems like the nicest guy in the world, by the way.
Mm-hmm. I honestly thought that is what the majority of the movie was going to be about.
Mm.
The initial thrust, and then kind of piece by piece, peeling it back.
As you can see from my graph, it's not the case.
No, it's just about 12 minutes of peeling back. And then, and in fact, maybe we can get to this later. It was very unclear to me when he was fired.
I think it was there's a big screening that happens at one point, which is not necessarily the first time it had been screened, but
we're used to a dramatic moment. And when you watch documentaries or reality TV show where it's like, okay, you're fired and you get a reaction. This, I think the first time they mentioned it is Sting kind of says in the middle of his comments, now that Roger?
Yeah, we'll call him Roger.
Now that Roger's gone. And they're like, wait, Roger's gone?
They had a bake-off, man.
I mean, I knew he was walking on the beach, but I didn't know he was like walking into the sunset for real in that way. But I would toss it back to you guys because one of my favorite elements of that initial pitch was they had a character that was made of stone.
Waka?
Yeah.
I thought that was kind of cool.
Played by Harvey Fierstein.
I wouldn't have hated to see that.
Mm-hmm.
I would have liked to see that. What about you guys? What were some of your favorite parts of the original pitch?
Oh, wow. Owen Wilson.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. What do you think, Steve? You're probably the foremost expert on Disney and story structure amongst us. Do you think it could have worked?
No, not in the slightest.
I don't know. Is it
really
that complicated?
That's a lot, man. Wait, you're talking about like...
Talk through the original pitch.
Creation myth is how it kind of starts.
You're talking about like the creation.
That's a whole movie.
Like this kingdom and going through the centuries.
Of the sun.
Of like, and Roger Allers is talking like crazy shit when he's talking about, and he's going to grab the sun at the end and pull it. And it's like, Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not what Disney movies are. And it seemed like an almost like... You know, he got this carte blanche idea of like Disney saying, hey, you just did Lion King, go.
Yeah.
But it's like...
Go spend a couple weeks in Peru on
on
Mickey's
sabbatical,
time.
Right?
Yeah.
But there's this there's a point where... I know everybody hates studio interference, but to me, studio interference is a very good thing for most films.
It just depends. Yeah.
On the director. It depends on the director and the teams. Mm-hmm.
Pappy, you always talk about auteurs.
No, I don't.
Yes, you do. You like taught me that word.
I've said the same thing that Stevie says. It just depends. Like, are you making like the Terminator the same movie 20 times because of studio interference, or are you Jeffrey Katzenberg who's just going to be like, no, we're doing Hamlet with lions, and then that's a movie.
We got a movie, boys.
Yeah,
like you know, you do that 1 foot, you know, 1 foot in, 1 foot out, and. You listen to this original pitch of, you know, Prince and the Pauper. Okay, that's one thing.
Which I feel they've done that before with, like, Mickey Mouse, haven't they? There's a Prince and the Pauper, Mickey Mouse.
Yes.
Yeah.
And
part of the pitch, too, was to have the imposter prince fall in love with a girl, but
who,
he's scared that she'll find out he's an imposter,
which is
exactly
Aladdin.
What Aladdin is.
Yeah, there's a bit of Aladdin in there.
Exactly what Aladdin is.
But the original... Emperor Prince was engaged to her, so it's like this new prince is like nice, and she's like, oh, I like this guy
who's,
yeah,
I like the Pacha version. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. So we have the Prince and the Pauper. Yeah, keep talking us through the pitch as we understand it.
And it sounds like Cusco in the original pitch, you know, was Manco. Seems like a very background character.
Mm-hmm.
Owen Wilson much more to the forefront.
Yeah.
That's what it makes it kind of sound like.
He still gets transformed into a llama, but then he doesn't talk the rest of the movie.
He's just a llama.
In llama form.
They're like, we want more David Spade. He's funny.
You have to hear that god-awful Sting song, Panorama, and he's calling it Llama.
Yeah.
And you know, you get this Yzma who doesn't have the wrinkles. She's kind of more of a...
She's like the
more like a witch doctor almost.
The witch from Snow White, or
yes,
the evil queen,
mm-hmm,
who's jealous of
the evil queen.
Yeah,
almost kind of like a mix of like Dr. Facilier from Princess and the Frog as well. But and you also have this Waka character who seems to be works in the kingdom for Yzma. It seems very odd.
Yeah, and Yzma summons the god of death and blocks out the sun.
Jeez.
At one point.
And then it takes Pacha to bring the sun back. And there's a whole lot going on here. And plus, it doesn't help that in theory, if you're doing a live action movie, it kind of works. We're talking about animated twins, Pap, that are different characters. Yeah, animated twins and clones, exactly right. that are just different characters in animated form. I'm kind of with Schumacher and Schneider when they got out of that screening where they're just like, I hate it. Like, I don't know who to root for. I didn't have fun. I don't know what this is about. No.
Yeah. We'll get to that in a second. Can you play, Josh, the clip of, I forget what it's called. It's like Andres Process, I think might be the name.
So Yzma is still in the movie, but I was told right up front that the new story outline has a different spot for Yzma. She is not a dominating figure anymore. She's almost a minor character. She is not somebody who's driven by vanity and wants her youth back, and she'll just be less in the movie. And I just lost a little interest at that point because the combination of Eartha Kitt and somebody who is so driven by vanity and this whole thing about this obsession with youth, to me was absolutely fascinating. And I would have gone all the way with that. Just take all that Eartha Kitt can offer and create a character like that.
See, that's what's weird to me is like, yeah, we're shitting on the original
pitch.
Nice
fade outs.
Thank you. Yeah, I added those in myself.
Those are good.
Which is weird. Also, I'll just say like from the audio quality of the sweatbox, it's pretty rough at times. There's a couple of times where it's just
hard to hear
when you're listening to it. Yeah, the audio doesn't seem
hard
finished.
To see. Dude, yeah. Sometimes they show a sketch and I couldn't. It was so blurry on internetarchive.com. I didn't even know what I was looking at.
Yeah. But what I was going to say was like Andres Deja, Disney legend, seemed to be more on board with the original. Sting, Stevie's rival, seemed to be more on board with the original. I don't know. Like, did Eartha Kitt even seemed to like the original more? Josh, like, do you think they're just being nice or do you think that there was something more complex in the initial pitch?
Eartha Kitt, do you have a clip of her saying this? I don't think you do, but
I don't think so.
She has a line that shows her complex reaction to this change. And she says something like, she really liked Roger's character of Yzma because it was deep and complex and all about finding beauty. But then she also kind of realized that the new version, she was a little bit more easy to understand. Is that how you guys understood that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like more straightforward in a lot of ways.
Yeah. So. And I think, too, we hit on this last week, the original premise... This is so funny to me. The original premise of Emperor's New Groove, according to Roger Allers, was how about developing a story about South American culture?
Yeah.
And as we talked about last week, that was basically completely scrapped for Booyah, essentially.
Well, dude, one of the funniest parts, too, is when they're talking about like the rumors after the screening where everything shit just hits the fan. They're like, there's a rumor it's in Jamaica. There's a rumor that it's in Nebraska.
With sheep.
Yeah, and Steve, it's exactly what you're saying. Like, this movie could be anywhere. And
anywhere
it doesn't,
USA.
It doesn't
matter.
Change anything.
I wonder if that's what they said. Like, does this need to be here?
I would say with if you had the little, like, Waka guy, he's kind of South American. Like, I think that's what Roger's vision was, right? Like, more South American culture versus what it morphed into, which is it could be anywhere. Speaking of that tough feedback, though, Stevie, how are you feeling for Raj? I know you weren't a fan of his initial vision, but like that whole part is like hard to watch.
It's incredibly, I'm happy they don't have the actual like bake-off sessions in this movie.
Can you explain what that is too? Because I read the same thing. There's also like some good articles on it. Like the sweatbox doesn't have everything. It's like two people's point of view. You know what I mean?
But I think it takes a humility to not put that in there because, yeah, it'd make for like great, you know, content, but also to watch some like animated movies don't just, you know, pop out in a year. These are sometimes 5 years, 6 years going to Coco's sake. I mean, it took him, what, 10 years?
Sting was saying his part alone had been 2.5 years.
These things take forever. And Roger Allers
was... That's insane. Could you imagine like John Lennon, Kurt Cobain, like... giving themselves like that to a studio. We can get into Sting later. Sorry to derail.
No, but like, so after that initial screening, you know, Schumacher and Schneider, I'm sure Eisner, everyone who's involved, who's, you know, got say over Disney Animation is like, hey, it's not working. We've invested millions. We're either going to scrap this movie or You know, this guy, Mike Dindal, did I say his name?
I said Dindal. Yeah.
Mark and Roger.
Yeah. Dindal, has the funniest parts of the whole movie. We like his stuff. We've been talking to him. What we're going to do is we're going to put these two guys back to back, and they're each going to give about 20-minute pitches over what they think the movie should be and where it could go.
Yeah.
And I think, unfortunately, Roger and Mike Dindal or Mark, I forgot how you say his name. Is it Mark Dindal or Mike?
I'll look it up.
I think it was Mike. We're in the room during the pitches with each other and, you know, Schneider and Schumacher.
Yeah.
And to hear that quote of like, I knew I didn't get it the minute that, you know, Dindal's pitch was over is kind of, it's really sad. Because he obviously invested his entire being into this movie. Just you can tell by the energy he brought during the start of this documentary, he was completely invested in it. But
Mark, first of all.
Mark Dindal.
But did he give a reason for that? Like, why did he think that? Like, why was he so sure?
Silence during his pitch.
And they were like rolling on the floor laughing
and
for Marks.
Dying laughing for Marks.
Yeah.
Like, just like, oh my God, that's hilarious. What could we do with this? And just trying to expand upon his. And Roger's just like, fuck. And he took it gracefully. Kudos to him. But
just took a walk on the beach, walked it right off.
But the funniest, it's not funny, but it's kind of tells you like why someone like this would get kicked off the project is I think it was Schumacher was looking at Mark's storyboards. And this is after, you know, this is kind of during that pre-bake-off session after the screenings. And he looks at Roger and he goes, you kept the first act the same, huh? And you can just tell that was like the breaking point right there. He's just like, yep, that's it.
Yeah, I want to introduce some of these characters a little bit too. Can you play, sorry, this is going to be a little bit of a longer clip. It's called Tough Feedback Long Clip. So this is, Stevie, you mentioned him, Schneider.
Don't forget about your mic there, Pat.
Schneider and Shoemaker are the two presidents of Disney Animation Studios at this point in time. From the original movie.
The sun. Inti battled supine.
For me, so much of the movie isn't working. I just don't know who I'm supposed to care about, what I'm watching. The pace seems really, really wacky. Like, just so leaden. And I'm not having much fun.
And we have not found a movie yet. And I think, you know, story-wise, for me, we're between two stools. We're neither a comedy, we're not a drama, we're not a this, we're not a that.
That being said, I'm relieved at this moment to be able to say the two things I really enjoyed in the movie were the love song and the llama song. Now, that's particularly convenient given our entire team that's here.
It's a good thing.
Well, I have to say, I enjoyed the movie far more than I thought I would.
Eh, shut up.
I really did. I enjoyed it.
Dude, that's rough, by
the
way.
You know, it's kind of like being rolled over with a steamroller, and then you get up sort of paper thin and try to blow yourself back out into proportion where you can work again. It's kind of par for the course a little bit on these pictures, but it's always hard to, you know, see the sandcastle be knocked down and start thinking about how to make it better. But that's basically, you know, what's good about the process is we go through these things and, you know, and it's a distillation process, so, you know, the weak stuff gets weeded out, and you just have to keep strengthening the foundation of your story and all that.
It's a pretty classy way to take it.
Well, and especially they're putting a camera in his face, you know, shortly after getting that that feedback. And I would have said too that they were being kissing Sting's ass a little bit just because of his celebrity status. But then they tell him to shut up, like when he's like, "I like the movie," like shut up,
fuck off.
Well, yeah. That kind of brings me to one of my biggest notes and one of the things I wonder what you two think about this. But we got this team that's like Roger has been really pouring into this. How big is the full team that's been working on this process so far?
They've spent a shit ton of money,
probably 200 people, I think.
Okay. Yeah.
You're talking about the director of Lion King, the guy who just made them, the guy who still holds the record for directing the most profitable anime movie of all time.
Yeah, and it's like, to describe like what we see when we see the outlines of Kingdom of the Sun, it's not by any means like a fully animated movie, but it's more than just like a flip book.
It's more than a flip book. You're talking like storyboards, like concept art. I mean, like
the director of Lion King, 200 a couple hundred people, dozens of people minimum.
Yeah.
Thousands of hours.
At least.
And then you got these two guys come in, watch for an hour, and then just swing their dick around. And I don't know if that's right. And I know you guys think the studio interference was positive in this case.
Maybe.
But that's really hard to swallow. Like, what? Are these guys that much more intelligent than 200 people working on the film? Like, what the fuck? What's going on here?
Here's my issue with it. And Stevie, I'm curious, like, what you think too. Like, here's my issue with it. It's like, dance with the date that brought you to some extent. And this is like, you have to remember, Katzenberg left the studio in 94. Like, the quality of the motion pictures that the studio is making goes down significantly. You know what I mean? Not entirely. They still make some good movies, but we're talking about, this is Hunchback.
I think without Tarzan, this movie gets made.
Yeah, probably.
Tarzan threw that studio for a loop with the expense that movie cost.
Yes,
it was unreal. And the animation they were doing, I honestly think Disney was like, we need something. Like, I think what they were getting from people above them, even though the presence of animation,
mm-hmm.
we're talking like CEO level type stuff, is we need to make fucking money, boys.
Yeah.
Like, we need to have a hit.
You have Hunchback, which is a giant expensive movie that didn't really hit. You have Pocahontas, which did not get the critical acclaim that they were hoping for.
Mulan made more.
But they're desperate.
Tarzan didn't make a shit ton because of the expense that it. I mean, for mm-hmm. how much the movie cost, it was unreal.
Can you explain that a little bit? Like, why, on the surface, why would Tarzan cost so much more?
We talked about this a little bit on Joseph Gordon-Levitt. What's that movie?
Don John.
Treasure Planet.
Oh.
That style of animation where you're...
Don John, the animated film.
Where you're building like a 3D computer model and animating around it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Revolutionary for the time, had a tiny window.
Yeah.
Tiny, tiny window. Just because of how expensive it was and other things came about that looked better.
I also think that was like an Eisner special too, that he just wanted to do Tarzan. And everyone was like, okay, boss, we can do Tarzan if you really want.
So honestly, in my opinion, without Tarzan, this movie gets made the way Roger Allers wanted to make it.
Yeah, and there's this power vacuum of like not having Katzenberg there. You know, like one, they're feeling heat because he just started DreamWorks with Spielberg.
Took
a bunch of really talented animators. By the way.
Is that why they had to shop them all out to France?
That could have been part of it. Yeah. I mean,
they did that
during Katzenberg's time too. I mean, they were shopping out the Bubbles and Little Mermaid to the Philippines, for God's sake.
They had
some microaggressions there.
Yeah.
Those Europeans, I don't know what it is, but they're so good at the drawing. What are you talking about?
Well, and not to mention, too, it's like Katzenberg's making a movie that's gunning specifically for this concept. Like, he was aware of it, so he starts making The Road to El Dorado, which is going to be set in South America, and he's trying to tie it to the same release date.
Which,
too.
I mean, so it's, who was on the soundtrack for that?
Elton John.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. So much better than Sting.
Yeah. Big time.
I fault Sting a lot for his involvement in this movie, so yeah.
I feel
we
bad
haven't
for
talked
Sting.
Much about Sting.
Yeah.
But Sting is like the top and bottom of this movie. And that makes more sense now knowing that
it's his wife's
creation. I was stunned when the first scene of the whole movie was Sting. Because
mm-hmm.
like Emperor's New Groove has nothing to do with Sting.
He did get an Oscar nomination for his one song, which we were wrong about. We were wrong about, because that song, it turns out, was written after all of the shit had already gone down. Like, he wrote that song knowing what the film would become, basically. Like, I don't. I liked his little llama jam, and like, why can't a person be more like a rock?
Oh,
like
my God.
The My Fair Lady. You didn't like that, Stevie? Come on.
No.
What was your favorite line that he had? You said your favorite line of the whole sweatbox.
Favorite line of the whole movie is Sting. And this may not be funny to you guys. I thought it was just the way he said it to me was so funny. You know, they're on this conference call with, you know, obviously the heads of the film, the, you know, two co-directors. You have these people surrounding, you know, this phone talking to Sting about, you know, he's talking about when Roger was doing this and, you know, are these songs usable? And he goes, I wish you the best of luck, gentlemen. I'm off to the Himalayas.
I may come back.
That to me is the most sting line you're ever going to hear in your life.
That really is funny.
Like, I'm off to the Himalayas. I may come back. Like, it was just such a funny line to hear him say. That's what that made me like gut laugh is when he said that. But I think Sting just wanted to win an Oscar.
Yeah.
I think he saw Elton John in Lion King was like, I want some of that.
Well, it's not just, look at the rundown they had. Elton John, Bette Midler.
Ooh, that's
with,
right.
Hunchback.
Yeah.
Christina with
Mulan. That's right.
What's his
Philadelphia
name?
Philadelphia Collins with Tarzan, which I think he did win an Oscar. Mm-hmm.
Which I like. I mean, listen, I talked about it last week. I would rather have songs written for the movie than like contemporary pop songs. You know what I mean?
So you got Tom Jones though.
It's pretty good.
Tom Jones is pretty damn
that
good.
That part made me crack up too.
Comes in explosively, yeah. Almost like he does in the film. Yeah. Actually,
at one point they're just like popping champagne with him. I don't know. It's like a one shot that they're popping
Tom Jones.
It's so weird. Yeah, I don't know. I will say like. The one drawback of the Sweatbox is that I don't know if it necessarily is a great documentary. You know what I mean? And Josh, you're more of an expert on this too. It's like she didn't know, like production issues aside, let's say they would have been able to finish it as like a properly finished thing. It's like, I don't think that she knew what she had, right? And as the story unfolded, she just didn't have the access to tell the story in a full way. And seeing so much of Sting is kind of anticlimactic compared to the conversations I want to be seeing.
I think that's exactly to the point. Like, there are a lot of times where the camera is in the writer's room or the feedback room, mm-hmm. and they start to give feedback and you can hear that audio, and then you can't because people start talking over it with their interview bites.
Yeah.
It's like, motherfucker, I want to hear what they're saying in the writer's room. Like, this mm-hmm. is unprecedented access into Disney's mm-hmm. writer room. Stevie, did you just wish they would have maybe just lingered for 15 minutes in some of those situations or something?
Yeah, part of me wishes that Katzenberg was still a part of the studio.
Dude, I would give anything for like this style of documentary about like The Little Mermaid.
Oh my
that would
God,
be amazing, dude.
It'd
be an hingeness. Of Katzenberg.
Like, you and I have read, I've read that book twice now. Disney War is such a fantastic book, but like, Jeffrey Katzenberg, for his genius.
Can you just say who he is real quick, just in case? Like,
Jeffrey Katzenberg was pretty much the right-hand man to Michael Eisner during his time at Disney.
He was the head of like all movies, not just
animation, but movies. This guy, like, I mean, I've talked about this before in the pod with the Gong Game, which is like, people just spitballing, what's your movie idea? You know, where does it go? How does it work? Which is like, it's kind of funny to me that this movie was made because never in a million years would Katzenberg have been like, oh yeah, we can do this. He'd just been like, no, not doing it. Like, because
that first screening, you think he would have just shut
it? It wouldn't have gotten to the screening.
He would have been the boss of Peter and Tom. Like,
yeah,
those two
he would have been like, we're not
dick.
Making this
he was
movie. He's
one
like,
level
he's like, I don't have a story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's like, it's too long. I don't understand what we're doing here. He just would have kicked it aside.
And he was just notorious for like flying in, like just being buzzed out of his mind on Diet Coke, just like
20 Diet Cokes,
his dick
just,
off.
Yeah.
And just like, nope, we're doing Dances with Wolves and Romeo and Juliet with Indians. Call it Pocahontas.
Call it Pocahontas, boys. We're doing it.
And fly away. Like,
what do you got? Hamlet with lions. Let's go. Like, he knew what he was doing. So that's why, like, it's kind of indicative that this movie would even be made after he left because it never would have gotten off the ground floor.
It never would have gotten to this point either where you're having that bake-off of, hey, we've already, like, spent millions and millions of dollars investing in this concept. Like, there would have been some better leadership in terms of, nope, we are going with this concept versus let's have a pitch-off where, like, a bunch of ridiculous ideas are being
thrown
out.
That goes back to my question I asked you guys earlier. Why... I feel like you guys are romanticizing that a little bit. A one person comes through and just in an authoritarian way lays it down. Like, why is that good? Is that really better than the collaborative process that's gone through?
For animation, it is.
Explain.
You have...
I'm not doubting you. I'm just like trying to process that, you know?
So, I mean, there's real truth to this. And I think that... what's his name? Brad Bird was a genius with this. John Lasseter, you know, outside of what he did, I mean, outside of his personal life, like, could do this very well.
He is.
You get these guys that you have hundreds of people, sometimes 1,000 people working on an animated film, and you have all these creatives in a room, and it's really hard to get everybody on the same page. Mm-hmm. It's incredibly hard. Like, to say, I know you want to do this. We're not doing that. Like, this is the vision we're going. Like, I approve this. No to this. Yes to this. Like, it is a collaborative process. But you also have to have that one person that approves all and is overseeing all. And I feel like Jeffrey Katzenberg, even though he wasn't, like, always in on that animated process, could steer a ship very well, which is, this is what works. This doesn't. You, let's do, like, let's work this out.
What makes them, what qualities make them qualified to, like, make those kind of decisions too? Like, what are they trained in? What is their, like,
doing coke and kissing ass? Like, just, I don't know. I mean, seriously, like,
is it just they need a person, or is it a special skill of a person?
Jeffrey Katzenberg was like the reason that Pretty Woman ever worked. He got lucky. Movie was a very much different movie before Katzenberg got a hold of it and said, this works, this works, this works. This ending sucks. We're going with this ending. Like, she should be this. Like, it's.
And here's the thing, too. I agree that Katzenberg was, like, really smart and, like, largely responsible for the Disney Renaissance and made, like, a fuck ton of money. Like, an incomprehensible amount of money.
Yeah, that's why he got fired.
But at the same time, it's like he also had all of the most talented animators in the world working for him at once. There wasn't competition. There wasn't DreamWorks. There wasn't Blue Sky. There wasn't Pixar. So it's like,
that's a good point.
I mean,
Illumination.
I probably could have coached the what's the Yankees team? The Murderous Row Yankees, pretty good too.
27 Yankees.
Yeah, I would have been a great manager for the 27 Yankees. Like, I could have produced those movies pretty fucking well too. Like, I'm not saying he wasn't talented and he wasn't smart, but also, like, look at what he's done since. He wasted $1 billion on Quibi or whatever.
Quibi.
Yeah. I don't know. Like,
so the two guys that are the avatar for that in this movie, what are their names?
Schumacher and Schneider.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Those scenes always kind of made me cringe because it was never clear to me, like, what are they good at? These people are living and breathing the story, and you just got done, like, watching your daytime soaps step into this room, and now you're, like, the god of it. It's something just about that rubs me the wrong way, and I can let it go after this, but that's kind of my main takeaway.
Well, it's funny. It's funny too, like, when you look at their Wikipedia page, they're often described as, like, a businessman / executive. You know what I mean? They're not necessarily, like, I'm not saying they're not creative people. Like, they definitely are, but at the same time, they are studio executives. That's what they do. Like, you're a business person. Like,
These are merch people. These are not.
Mm-hmm. Are they studying pop culture trends? Like, are they looking at Google results?
What they just get paid a lot of money
at this
for
point. They're probably under a lot of goddamn pressure.
Yeah,
I mean, this is the boiling point of Disney animation kind of boiling over. Like, what the hell is this? Mm-hmm. Am I right? I mean, we can look back on some of these movies and back in my childhood, being like, oh man, Tarzan, a banger, cost a fortune, didn't make a ton. Mm-hmm. Like, this movie cost a fortune, didn't even break even out.
Came out the same year as Dinosaur, which is a very bad movie and cost another metric.
Cost
shit
a fortune,
money.
Didn't make dick. Mm-hmm. Like, you're really boiling over. You're coming out of the Renaissance, Katzenbergless, you know, whether the studio doesn't have a great direction, you're just starting to dabble into Pixar at this point. It's very kind of like people sweating after each box office release.
You can almost call it a sweat box.
Yeah, it's a sweat box.
You did that on purpose.
Maybe I did.
Yeah, I mean, Anna, it's interesting to see. I don't know. I don't know if Empire of the Sun would have been better than Emperor's New Groove. I kind of doubt it because Emperor's New Groove, I think, is the funniest Disney movie and a classic. But that's the shitty thing is, like, I will never know. There's no way to know. Like, it's impossible to know because it doesn't exist as a film. It's I can only imagine, you know.
Yeah, and I also think too, I mean, I think another reason that Roger what's his name, it's Allers, gotta be Allers,
yeah,
he kind of did that, you know, Phantom Menace, George Lucas type deal. He even kind of told on himself when he was like, if you remove one thing, the film doesn't work. And it's like,
yeah,
that's not a good movie. You gotta be able to trim fat in certain places.
That is the only thing, like, Josh, to Stevie's point earlier, it is harder to fix animated movies, right? Like, you need, that's why they do all of, like, the test screenings and, like, the incremental buildup of the detail, because you can't just do reshoots on an animated movie. You know what I mean? It's not how it works. It takes too long to like make the scenes. So it's like you kind of have to have a more definitive.
And also you have to remember too, plan. Like merchandise people got to know, what do these characters look like? Is this a good guy? Is this a bad guy? Mm. Like, we got to make t-shirts. We got to make toys. What are we doing?
Why isn't the story completely settled on before they draw one single sketch? Like, why isn't there maybe not a locked script, but there certainly shouldn't be like, oh, halfway through the animation, we don't like the story as a whole. There's no movie here.
Yeah.
You should be able to read that and use your imagination to fill in the gaps. It feels like they just gave him all this creation to be like, we're not sure, but maybe once you fit, like maybe once you put the animation and color and sound behind it, maybe it'll make sense.
Yeah.
That just seems like
this wasn't in the sweatbox, but this was in a Vulture article called The Oral History of Emperor's New Groove. And they mentioned that a common refrain started to become, well, remember the Lion King. Like, I think normally it would not have gotten to that point. Like, he has had a longer leash than a lot of people.
Anybody should have ever gotten. Yeah.
But he made the most, literally to this day, the most successful traditionally animated movie of all time. You know, like he kind of deserved it, but
it's
at some point someone
came in and said, Lion King money's going to run out at some point.
Yeah.
And we saw that happen on screen.
Well, does any part of you think that maybe with some tweaks and changes, Empire of the Sun, which is a great band, by the way,
Empire of the Sun.
We are the people who rule the world.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
One of their songs. Yeah. They have a couple other hits too, but.
Are they named after the movie?
I don't know.
I hope so.
That just struck me. That's what I was looking up on my phone a second ago. But I think there could have been something profound in that to come out of it. Something good, maybe. They didn't see a final version by any means.
Mm-hmm.
Just a thought, you know. They really scrapped it completely. They took it from. It was at like a 75% sandcastle, and they leveled it back to about 5 or 10%.
Yeah. And it's, I don't know, the studio gets more cheesy and dumb, I think, for a significant portion of time with movies like
Home on the Range
and Chicken Little, which is the worst Disney animated movie.
That's the kick in the dick right there, is Chicken Little.
Can you play, Josh, when you have a second, could you play the clip David Spade, please?
I liked it when I was, what was my old one?
Manco.
Manco.
Yeah, why did they change Manco?
I think it means pussy in Japanese, and that's not what bothered them.
Did you hear like a
It means bad movie in Turkish, and they didn't want that.
Whose call is...
I should have edited that last part, but I think you hear JP, who is the other director, goes, after David Spade goes pussy, goes, he didn't like that joke. I don't know, you thought my opening spoiler was vulgar. David Spade's way more vulgar on this behind the scenes.
I think that was a great joke setup, though. Because you're like, because he does that little pause, and that's not what bothered him.
Yeah.
Like, that's a great setup.
But on Reddit, there's a TIL today I learned that's still available to see today, where people actually think that is what that word means in Japanese.
Wait, that's true?
I don't know. Is it what it really means in Turkey? Like, is it just a full joke that people are like, I don't know. I think that's kind of funny.
There's no way the same phonetic noise means pussy in Japanese and bad movie in Turkish.
Can we get some of our Turkish or Japanese fans to write in and tell us what manka means?
Please write in.
Although manka, isn't that a name for like something anime? Is that like an anime term?
There's manga.
Manga.
Manko. Yeah.
What's manko?
Manko?
Manko.
I'll look up manka in Japanese right now while you guys continue.
I thought it was manko.
I thought it was manko.
Yeah.
Is the name. Stevie, did you have... I'm going to pull up my graph here again just to show. There's a significant portion of the sweatbox. Again, I think this middle portion here where it's turmoil gets all the hype. There's like half of the movie that's just like wrapping up the story. I thought that was probably the weakest part of this whole documentary.
Yeah.
Because she's probably with her husband. They're not there. They're kind of checked out. But it's like we'd miss the frenetic scramble that was, hey, we have 18 months to finish this movie.
Like, I like Roy Disney. I don't need to see him in this movie.
He's weird. His appearance is weird, isn't it?
It's just because he looks like Walt. He looks just like Walt. But like, I don't need to see Roy. I don't need to see some of this extra fat of what kind of this. We all know what this movie became. I think the meat of it is what this movie was.
Yeah.
Like, and why. Do I like seeing Eartha Kitt kind of warm up and talk to the director? Sure.
Do I like seeing the holiday stuff? Yeah. I like the Darth Maul pumpkin. That's like interesting. That's cool. But it's also like, I don't know. I don't really care either.
Like, yeah. I mean, I say I don't like live for Schadenfreude or anything like that. But the turmoil part is the part that everybody remembers.
Mm-hmm.
Like everyone knows this.
It almost goes back to being like too normal of a making of at that point. Like, I don't know, like what she thought this would be, you know, like if she thought this would literally be something that people saw outside of TIFF. Well,
I'm sure that she was locked out of certain places, like,
yeah,
get out.
Mm.
Like, you're not going to have access to this, you're not gonna have access to these people. Mm. I'm sure Disney was very on top of what this movie could, you know, what this could be.
Which is why you only see the back of Eisenberg's head, is my guess.
Like, Eisenberg.
Eisenberg.
What's his name?
Michael Eisner.
Eisner. Sorry, not everyone Heisenberg. Is a Disney freak, okay?
Just made me think of Heisenberg. Like
Michael Eisenberg. Like
they that. Talked about him a few times.
Yeah.
And it was like, I was waiting to see him. And it seemed pretty clear. He was like, I'm not going to be on this fucking documentary. Like,
oh, yeah. The levels of dick swinging are pretty crazy. You know what I mean? Like those, what, Schneider and
Schumacher.
Schneider and Schumacher are two levels below.
Yeah, they're below.
Yeah.
Like they're just henchmen compared to like where people are like Roy and like Michael are.
Michael Eisner's like, listen, I got to work on this acquisition of Go.com. It's going to be the next big thing. Trust me. ESPN.go.com. It's going to be huge. I don't know, Josh. You know what I mean? They're like, wouldn't a great documentary, wouldn't we have seen, like, they don't even mention, like, the Happy Meal thing in this. You know what I mean? Like, that's why they had a year and a half to finish it. Like, none of that context is provided within the sweatbox itself.
Yeah. I would say the whole thing seems a little bit meandering and just kind of piecing together where she happened to be during the process. They skip weeks, months, and I think years at some point.
It goes from like Christmas to like Halloween, like that. I'm like, wait a second. That's the next Halloween. I had to like recalibrate timeline wise. 1999.
Yeah. I think a lot of people that don't have your level of Disney knowledge would have a kind of a, like me, I had a little bit of a hard time piecing this shit together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Was there, let me check my bank of clips, but I mean that like that was pretty much the end. There's not like a climactic ending. It's like, and again, like I feel like a better documentary would have been like, oh, and this shit was a hit. You know what I mean? Like in the sense of like you almost need the context of
what came after
10 years later, like, oh, it didn't do great in the box office, but then it became this cult.
Everyone can quote Emperor's New Groove.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't take a whole lot. Like
it was a massive success on VHS. I think the top selling like home movie release of the year when it came out.
Well, you know what? They can't say they didn't make their money back then because that's where they used to make all their box office was VHS rentals.
Do you remember the PlayStation 1 Emperor's New Groove game?
I do.
They showed a clip, a real quick clip of it in this.
That was like blowing my mind because I remember that too.
What do you do in it?
You became Kuzco, like you became the different animals, like, and there would be like
just walk around eating grass.
I kind of remember like of Yoshi's Island where you'd transform the different things and you would hit a threshold and you would transform back into Kuzco. I never beat it. I just played it at one point, like maybe a demo.
A lot of those Disney games are known for being hard as hell.
Toy Story,
Aladdin, and Lion King. Like I think there's a Lion King a Lion King video game for Sega Genesis that's considered like one of the hardest games of all time.
None of them are
fucking
great.
Flamingos, dude. Yeah. Or the giraffe heads. I hate those things.
Dude, this is like a total side quest, but that's why I'm almost like this partnership with Epic that Disney's doing now. It's like they might actually finally be getting it right with some video game things. They've never had good video games. The best
Kingdom Hearts, bro.
That's the best one, which I love, but it's incomprehensible mess of a story. It's just so unaccessible
Kingdom Hearts,
and
like,
strange.
The game story is what Kingdom of the Sun could have been.
Dude, that is the funniest thing you've ever said.
Like, that's what we would have gotten. Just nonsense of like, what is this?
I know this isn't a Kingdom Hearts pod, but what is the, I know it's a mess, you just said, what's the plot?
How long you got?
Yeah.
You can't give a general gist for it. That's the kind of thing it is. Like,
three friends on an island that may have parents, may not.
Right. And then
us?
Yeah, get us.
Swallowed by the darkness.
The darkness, yeah.
Okay.
Put on different worlds around the universe.
Mm-hmm.
The darkness is spreading.
Hate to see it.
They're kidnapping princesses to steal their light so they can't vanquish the darkness.
Which I, so in one of the three friends, Kairi, she's still out there, right? Like,
she's still out there.
It's literally been 30 years. she's never got recovered.
There's Riku, there's who's turning to the darkness.
There's
Sora.
He has a villain arc, but now he's good again, right? Like,
yeah, kind of. That was kind of in two. And then there's Sora, who teams up with everyone's favorite Disney characters around the universe. To
the best part of the, that's all it had to be.
That's all it had to be. But then you get into like people that like have bodies but don't have souls.
Mm-hmm.
Like twins
and clones.
Yeah, like Sora was like an empty body or a nobody. I forget what you call that. There's a whole.
I don't know.
It's gobbledygook, dude. It's gobbledygook.
There's Kingdom Blades.
There's these secret organizations. There's Organization 13.
I liked that game. It's fun.
One and two are like one of my favorite games of all time. It's just
I have three.
Did you beat it?
No.
Oh yeah.
There's three?
Yeah.
I didn't even know.
There's
that.
Three. No, there's way more than three. There's like more.
Dream Drop Distance.
Mm-hmm.
There's
those aren't DLCs. I thought it was like a huge deal when.
No, they're on
the
Nintendo DS. Or
it's
whatever.
Like there's like a card based type.
There's
game.
There's a card based game
and like a Final Fantasy turn based combat.
But if you miss a game like this movie,
God help you.
The story makes no sense.
Yeah.
you can't miss a second.
You've missed two movies.
Another question I have for you. Don't you think a meticulous movie should be like, if no second is wasted, then if you get rid of a second, shouldn't that mean some things fall apart? You said this way earlier in the pod, but you said that's a sign of a bad movie if you take out
animated. It's a really awful sign animated, because what happens is it's like,
well, that's a good point, I guess. Yeah, I see what you mean.
Animated wise is this: if you make a movie where it's brick by brick, is every so important, every little detail,
there's no editing.
You can't, because what you're going to do is, let's say I go take out this piece of drywall behind you. In a regular movie, it's like, okay, we're going to just redo this drywall.
It's load bearing.
Yeah. In an animated movie, you pretty much, you take out that wall, this wall, two doors upstairs, a window out there. It's a nightmare in animation, because you really have to be like, okay, I took this out. This character no longer exists, but why are they over here saying this line? This line doesn't make sense. It really just diverts the entire process of what it could be. So that's why they were just like, we're not even going to tweak this shit. We're just going to tear it down, because that's the only thing we can do.
One of my last notes here, I'm going to double check the sheet, but Allers, he basically leaves the documentary.
God, like, I can't even look at that page. It's so hideous.
What does that mean?
You're right. Your handwriting.
Do you want to see my graph again? Look at that. It's pretty good.
One of my favorite pap stories, we were in the sixth grade. He got every question right in a test, and our teacher still failed him because she couldn't read it.
Yeah, that's stupid.
Never learned his lesson from that one.
It's still one of my favorite stories. But you failed that?
I'm a good typer now. Allers goes on to work on Lilo and Stitch, but
typist.
He never really recovered, like you said, Stevie. Like, this is the guy who directed, like, imagine James Cameron directing one bad movie after Titanic and then never coming back. Like, it's literally like that equivalent of thing. Like, he does a little bit of work on Lilo and Stitch and then kind of just gets into art. Like, has less than 1500 followers on Instagram. Like, doesn't seem to have.
You're talking about the guy that saved Lion King.
Yeah,
because I mean, they don't talk about it enough. Like, he was the dindle on Lion King.
Not to mention, like, Lion King, which then became a huge live-action reboot 20 years later, like, the biggest movie, quote, animated movie of the year. Like, that he's made them billions of dollars. Literally, that company.
Won't give him the time of day.
Isn't that weird? Like, I feel so bad. Like, was he just that fucked up from what happened?
I mean, wouldn't you be gun shy?
Yeah.
Like, he was very graceful on this documentary. Mm-hmm. He had every right not to be.
I don't know what
every
he did on
right not to be mm-hmm. graceful at all.
I don't know what he did on Lilo and Stitch, but that was the last good Disney movie for a while then.
Just a little bit of a personal anecdote, and I hope that this fades before like the next quarter decade, but my own job occupation, like our department was eliminated recently. I'm fine, everybody, it's okay. Although you could subscribe to the Patreon,
that would help. Help.
Times are tough,
but we have like a 2.5 month grace period where we're still working, and I am finding it incredibly hard to find any motivation to like put forth creative energy towards that anymore now that I know that. But I would like to think that after that 2 month period, I'm going to be rebounding and onto my next thing, you know, like it is pretty crazy. It almost makes me think that he contractually maybe wasn't able to go to another animation studio. Is that possible? Maybe.
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't know.
I mean, Chris Saunders, I forget his name, went pretty straight to DreamWorks after his run with Disney. I mean, I don't think they have a non-compete for animators.
Maybe he just had a change of course in his life. Maybe he just wasn't into it anymore, and that's fair, right?
I mean, I was gathering, like I said, things secondhand from his Instagram. Like, he does art shows. Like, he had, like, an exhibition somewhere. Like, he posted about the Lion King 30th anniversary. You know, maybe he's just...
This is all chill. Is his art all like someone falls and they hit up the dust and it spells out sex in there?
Yeah.
Is that basically like his main thing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Nice.
No,
it's nice.
Cool. Like, oh, sorry. Another note. I actually didn't write
this. You
said
he seemed really nice, by the way.
He seems like the nicest guy ever.
We like this guy.
He seems too nice.
Can I say, I think Stevie will recognize this. Does every California creative from this time period dress the exact same way I'm dressed now, with like a collared shirt, but like a laid back type, like print to it? Like, I feel like every single one of these people, like, until you get to like the upper management, then you're like suits, like what's his name, Tom, had like a Cartier watch on. It's like, okay, you get it, you're rich at this point. But like, all of the creatives have the same look.
All of them.
It's so funny. And all of my just like glasses. A Disney thing. Yeah.
And like, one thing that made me laugh really hard.
Glasses,
is all of them got glasses. One thing that made me, not the greatest hairlines either in this movie, but one thing that made
including
me
looking more and more and more like me. Like,
Sting's was, I mean, it was receding throughout like the entire documentary.
It's just hanging in there.
It was like starting somewhat full, then it was like receding.
And at the very end, he like had it like white all of a sudden. It was like dyed white.
If Bob Iger could see my shirt, I'd get a contract right now. Like, a free movie deal.
Look Do you draw, son?
Look at my hand. Yeah, look at this graph.
No, but in this movie, what kind of made me laugh was it kind of did the Sidney Lumet in 12 Angry Men, where like, in this movie, everyone starts out really standing, like sitting very tall in their chairs. And throughout the process of like going through the turmoil and coming out the back end, they're just slouching lower and lower and lower into their chairs. Like, they're just almost like in a depressed state at some point.
It's kind of like my mic tonight. I can't get this thing to like, sorry if that's been annoying to the listener, but I have to keep adjusting it. It keeps slipping down.
And you were lecturing Stevie on his mic etiquette before we started.
And I mentioned you earlier too, like, hey, talking to the mic, Pappy.
Were there any clips we didn't play? Or were you going to say something? Sorry.
Yeah. In addition to maybe the wardrobe and hairlines, did you guys notice, minus Eartha Kitt, a distinct lack of any women folk?
Yeah.
You think?
There's one animator, and she's the one who brings up the sheep in Nebraska, but that's literally the only other woman in the entire documentary. Yeah.
It's a little odd to me, I feel like. Another part that made me cringe is when they're talking about Incan culture. One guy was like making a big data point of anatomy for Incan people. It's like, dude, that's just human anatomy. Like, what are you talking about?
I guess with their hands and all that stuff.
I guess so. I don't know what he's getting at there.
Could you play the Cut Eartha song? I think is the name of the clip. I don't think we listened to this.
Yeah, I got it. We definitely didn't. Here it goes.
I'll be the sovereign queen of the nation. I'm the chicest.
This is not an Emperor's New Groove, right?
That's Tom Jones.
That deadly concentration put an end to my frustration. Now this perfect world begins and ends with moi. What's my name? What's my name?
Why did this get cut? She's good. I don't know. It's fun. There's no villain song in this movie.
I would have liked for that to be a Cusco and Aunt Yzma song. I could have the same beat or not.
Yeah, that'd be good.
I think that'd have been a little clever. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'd have liked that.
Yeah.
Where you play it in the movie, I don't know. But I would have liked that. You also have to remember, too, one of my other favorite parts of the movie. I don't like people getting shit on, but when they get done with the screening of Emperor's New Groove, where it's still somewhat of a rough cut, I think it was Schumacher sits up and goes, "Where's Mark? Where's Mark? There you are." So everything you did, gotta go. Like,
yeah.
He's talking to the guy who did the score of the movie. It's like, Jesus, guy.
Dude, that guy's funny. Yeah, the score guy who comes in.
He's cool about it.
Yeah, he seems super chill. He's like, "Hey, I got paid. Like, I don't give a shit."
It's like, I was making good music. That's just not what they wanted. Mm-hmm. I appreciate that. Do you guys remember how last time we were talking about the sexuality of Yzma too?
Yeah.
There's a very prominent line they cut where she says, "Just because there's snow on the roof, darling, doesn't mean there isn't fire in the furnace," and her hips swing. It's like,
yeah,
I'm old, but I'm horny.
Yeah, that's exactly. That can only mean that. That can literally only mean that. Dude, that's so funny.
Meanwhile, no women working on this shit.
Yeah, because like even in when Yzma was still like in the kingdom in the sun or whatever before his Emperor's New Groove, she was like saying lines about like certain stuff turning her on and stuff like that. It's like, oh, all right, Kronk stuff makes a little more sense.
Yeah,
they like cut everything. Remember when I said the sandcastle went from 75% to 5%? Part of that 5% is like Yzma's horniness. keep that.
That's
we
safe.
Like that.
Yeah. The only other note that I had it's a little bit more down, but just like Roger Allers describing what it was like to get that review, and he says they chop your hands off and pull your pants down, and you're standing there with two bloody stumps. Like, damn, son, like that's
trying to pull your pants back up. Yeah,
it's quite the metaphor that you're laying down there. That sounds terrible. Anything else that we missed that we didn't talk about?
Much like Owen Wilson, John Goodman only shows up for a bit, and they don't say salt of the earth verbatim, like we kept saying last episode, but they do say they made the character to be like John Goodman and that he would be an honest, forthright person. And that is basically salt of the earth.
Salt of the earth. Yeah.
I really appreciated that.
So many words. Yeah. Could you play one more clip? Sorry, Snuff Out the Light. Do you have that?
Yeah.
This is a song that was cut, which is actually available on YouTube. Go ahead. Yeah, and hit play.
When a woman acquires a certain age.
Boy, where is this going?
Who adored you no longer swoon.
It's horny.
It pays to avoid the sunlit days and live by the light of the kindly moon. But the moon grows old just like us all. And her beautiful years are done. So now she prays through endless days to take her revenge on the sun.
How about we fade this out and finish the whole pod on this?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's what I was thinking.
Cool.
We'll do yes or no's. If you guys are ready, I'll go first. This is a yes. Like, this is a classic part of Disney lore from this time. Oft discussed, I think even made more classic by the fact that like Disney owns the rights to this and has buried it, so it's like kind of hard to find. You got to go to this weird website to watch it. It's not a perfect documentary. I wouldn't even say it's a great documentary, but it's virtually like one of the only unfiltered by Disney looks into what it was like to work for this company at this time, which is a very interesting time and correlates with when I was growing up and watching these movies. You know, there's good and bad, right? Like, it probably would be an amazing place to work. Your kids would probably fucking love it if you were making movies for Disney. But at the same time, there's a lot of hard shit that comes with it and a lot of pressure that these people were feeling. Huge flaw of the documentary that's basically told through Sting's POV. Probably the worst part of the documentary.
It's got one post-credit song in the real film.
Because it doesn't, madness. It correlates nothing to like the final product that we see. But I would almost say like required watching if you're a big Emperor's New Groove fan, because it just provides context. Like, I think I wrote in my Letterboxd review, like, this would be the most amazing DVD extra of all time. Like, if you just watched Emperor's New Groove and then like got all this back context, like, wait, what the fuck happened in the making of this? So I'll give it a hard yes, but it's not a great documentary, and don't expect, you know, this amazing filmmaking when you watch it. Go Josh next, clockwise.
I did enjoy this. I like documentaries. I think they're interesting. I like when they're raw and unfiltered. But I used this word earlier. I just think this one's a little too meandering.
Yeah.
It's not focused. They didn't really focus on the sweaty part of the sweatbox where that deadline is looming.
Yeah.
They kind of just let two quotes kind of explain it. Mm-hmm. That could have been the whole doc, you know, just a little cold open to get us to, we have to meet this deadline in X amount of time. Or they could have followed on Roger Allers and his being let go.
Yeah.
But in the actual movie, the course of the movie, it's even unclear when that happens. At least it was to me. So I did like it. I would have a hard time recommending this. I would probably give it a soft no, but I do recognize like hardcore Disney fans like you guys, like obviously this is like a gem for you, but as a normal guy off the street, I'll just give it a soft no to kind of keep things even keel, if that's okay.
I think that makes sense. And again, I'll go back to my chart here. This movie is not what
you
we
don't
make
need
it
to go
to
back
be.
To this chart. Can we put that chart on Instagram?
There's, like, yeah, there's only like 14 minutes of this movie which are the true turmoil. A lot of it's just get my shirt in there.
I did, and then okay, one with the shirt and then one where people will try to decipher the writing, is my thought.
Yeah, it's not exactly what it's made out to be. I'll put it that way. But Stevie, go ahead. Yep.
Just as someone who I feel like has watched so many Disney movies and read a lot about Disney, Josh is right. For someone like you or me, Pappy, this is kind of a gem. We, you know, on the surface, Emperor's New Groove is a 78-minute movie. It's funny. Possibly the funniest Disney movie ever made. Years behind that is just hell for someone who worked their tail off to kind of try to get their dream off the ground. And we get to see a lot of what happens when studios write blank checks or give, you know, incredibly long leashes to people before it's too late. I absolutely loved kind of the morphing of what this movie started as and what it turned into, and seeing the unfiltered behind the scenes of it, and Sting going to, you know, saying he's going to the Himalayas is still one of the funniest things I've ever heard someone say over the phone.
It could have been cut there. They didn't actually need to show the Himalayas.
Yeah, there's nothing, dude. But just hearing,
it makes it funnier.
Just
though.
Hearing that, I wish you luck, gentlemen. I'm going to the Himalayas. Like, it's just,
when we the audience follow him to the
we
Himalayas.
Go to the Himalayas.
Like, that's like the interesting part of the story.
Like, why? We didn't need to. We could have gotten a black card and said Sting wouldn't return to the project for a year and a half.
Yeah.
Like, it's all we needed to know. But I'm going to give this a hard yes. Just that backstory is just incredible to see. Not a great documentary, though. But for someone who, you know, if you're someone who just likes that backstory information and kind of what poured into making a 78-minute movie that didn't make any money at all, it's interesting as hell. So hard yes.
And I feel like the definitive version of this story, it still remains kind of untold. Like, this podcast wasn't it necessarily. You know what I mean? There needs to be like a...
Bro, what's the McDonald's thing? You've been teasing that for like two episodes.
No, that's it. Just like, that's why when they said we had this year and a half to make it, the reason was McDonald's. They had a contract with McDonald's and would have lost millions of dollars.
Got to make them Happy Meals, man.
So in this movie, there is like a 30-second scene where they show some of the creators playing with the toys.
Yeah.
But that's all you get from that.
And they knew they were going to be like llamas and stuff. And I think you can like still see the commercials where it's like, they put a llama in a Happy Meal? Like a llama toy, I think is the commercial at the time. But it's... The definitive version of this is still out there because I need to talk to Roger. Like, I need to hear what he thought. Like, what were the next 10 years of your life like? You know what I mean? Like, have the context of, yeah, it didn't do good in the box office, became a cult hit and inspired a Disney Channel show. Like, there's...
Which we reached out to him on multiple platforms.
We'll see.
Maybe there's a chance we tag on a quick 10-minute interview with him to this spot.
That would be so cool. That would be amazing.
And honestly, too, I know I kind of laid... blame at the feet of Roger for that first initial screening. I highly doubt that the presidents of animation for Disney weren't checking in all the time or looking at the progress that was being made before that screening.
100%. Yeah.
You can't just stand up and say, oh, it's all your fault. This is terrible. We're going to go in a different direction. It's like they were 100% giving notes or on this project, like on site before it ever got to that point.
So they had some of these thoughts already kind of going into that.
Dude, even they probably gave some notes like, oh, you could explore this, go do this.
I really lingered on that point earlier. They just came in for like 20 minutes and then swung around.
No, they were 100% on site. They were looking at progress. Like for them just to be like, we had no idea this screening was going to be this bad. It's kind of.
You have four projects in the air at most at any one time.
At most. They were 100% coming by the studio to see what was going on.
There's that guy. We didn't talk about him. I think his name's Randy Farlow, but he's like, he talks, he has this effeminate voice and he has black hair and the beard and it's kind of thicker. You know what I'm talking about? Like,
he's one that looks depressed the entire time.
Yeah. He like somehow straddles both administrations of this movie and catches no strays for his involvement. Like, he's clearly, I think he's a producer on the film. And somehow like manages the transition between the two versions of this project. It's like, dude, I think you should have been held accountable at some point. He's just like rolling with it the whole time. It's very weird. Like, you're just kind of, that's the way she goes. It's like, well, listen, it's kind of your fault. But that was Empire of the Sun, The Sweaty Box, Emperor's New Groove, two-part. Thanks for doing
Empire
this.
Empire in the Sun.
Empire of in.
Yeah, of the sun and in the sun.
I love this. I think this is one of the best things spoilers can do is... review a movie that people are really fond of and just that's one product and then take you on a deep dive as a separate product instead of like trying to add all that together. Like, I really enjoyed this with you two fellas. I learned a lot.
It was a fun. Yeah. I'm glad you guys did it. I really wanted to do it. Been wanting to do it since spoilers started almost. So yeah, pretty happy, but we're not done.
Oh no.
Oh no.
And I think there's a prize?
Oh my gosh. We're going to settle the trivia for who is truly the Emperor of the New Groove.
In the sun.
In the sun. Of the Emperor of the Sun of the New Groove in the Sweaty Box. But I don't think we played this. It's a pretty great clip from the movie. It's Sting telling them what to do at the end of the movie. We never play that,
no,
did we?
No, I don't think so.
Do you care if we play this? Maybe you can set up the clip a little bit, and when we come back, we will get right into trivia, where I have a very nostalgic prize for whoever wins between Stevie
and
Pappy.
So Sting wrote a letter to...
Oh, it's so good.
...to Disney after he had seen what the product had become, and he was basically like, I don't think that... it needs to be about a theme park. And he's like basically questioning, like, I can't believe I'm in bed with this company at this point. And one of the best parts is like Roy E. Disney, nephew of Walt Disney, was like, well, he's got a point, but you know, so
listen, they took most of it as advice in the final product, I think.
I mean, they still build the theme park, right? On the hill next door.
Well, the way I took it is that he builds a house with a slide, but it's not like a full fledged tearing down of anything anymore. It's more like a companion to Poshka's. He's like his friend. He lives
Josh,
next door.
I love your enunciation of people's names the past two episodes.
I can't.
You cannot grasp anyone's names. You are
Yzma.
Pacha.
I could have sworn there's a V.
Michael Eisner. Cusco.
Michael Heisenberg.
Dude, you like.
Michael Heisenberg is canon for spoilers.
All right, fuck off.
Now.
Here's the. Sting letter to the editor. Can't wait for you guys to hear this.
Gentlemen, when you've achieved genuine human values, you don't need a theme park or a water slide. I've been aware for a while now that my vision of the world and Disney's may be at odds. I can only be candid, but there's something intrinsically faulty with this film, and I find it very difficult to continue working on something that goes against my beliefs. I offer my views humbly, and I look forward to your response. Yours sincerely, me.
Does everyone know about this letter?
No.
Everyone should see it, because it's a very thoughtful letter that just says the movie shouldn't end with him have learned the lesson only to relocate his hideous palace. He should have learned not to make a hideous palace in the countryside. He should have. And I read it, I went, oh, this is a really good note.
The thought occurs, you know, way
Roy
back
Disney.
In the back
is this too
of
much?
Whoops, this is really is close to the edge.
Did we cross the line? I think it's a good note.
Got lost in your
Okay.
That's a really good note.
I've been aware for quite a while now that my values and Disney's do not align.
Sting's song. This is the trivia, by the way. It is for a grand prize for you guys, so I hope you're taking this seriously.
Is there a tiebreaker since I'm winning?
Yeah, so this is the thing. Last week, Stevie won, so you're ahead 1-0. So you have to go first on this one. Mm-hmm. And if you win, it's over. But if Pappy wins, I got an overtime question.
All right.
They're both just closest twos. So Sting, that's kind of why I wanted to play.
Can I say real quick too before you read it, I love that everyone calls him Sting. Like there's a multiple
he called
times
himself me.
They answer the phone and say, "Hello, Sting."
Hello, Mr. Sting.
They take a lot of pleasure in saying that word, I think.
Yeah.
Okay, so his song "Every Breath You Take" is at the time that this factoid was written, was officially the most requested radio song of all time.
Weird.
Your question is, how much does Sting make in royalties from "Every Breath You Take" per day? Stevie, for the win.
Now? In 2024?
When this factoid was written.
Okay. When was the factoid written?
Who's to say?
Okay.
actually, I do have. They called this a 20-year-old song in the factoid. It's actually released in 83. So
I thought it was 86.
So
in 2003, how much was he taking home?
Before Bidenflation?
Is that helpful?
Yeah, it is helpful.
Sorry, I didn't have that information right at first. But
well, Pap and I know his net worth, and it's shockingly high for a man of his caliber.
It's insane.
Yeah, the Police were so good, but Sting solo sucks. Per day in 2003, I will say he made $350,000. No, I'll say this. I'll say he made $38,000 a day.
One of the things I remember about Sting is that he gets a live Christmas tree every year and then replants it. Like, he digs it up by the roots, puts it in his house, then maintains it living. And takes that. I think that's got to cost at least more than a day's worth of "Every Breath You Take" royalties. So I'll say $40,000 a day.
Disappointing, because I really wanted this to go into overtime.
No,
those are ridiculous guesses. It's actually $2,000 a day, which is so much money, you guys.
It's $14,000 a week. Yeah, I guess
just off on royalties. Like, oh, here's my check. Go to the mail. Go to the mail.
For one song. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. You're right.
Yeah.
Damn.
Man, I thought you'd have more savvy. When he guessed 14 times what the number was, I thought this was golden for you, Bobby.
19 times, Josh.
19 times. Whatever.
Are you
okay?
My
pronunciation, my math, whatever. Here's my bonus question.
What was the bonus one?
Just in case.
This one's worth 3.
It's not. You already lost, but David Spade has siblings or sibling, how many does he have? And if you can place what order he is in between those as like a tiebreaker within the tiebreaker is the last question.
I would say
Kate was his sister-in-law, right? Not related, right?
Sister-in-law, yeah.
Sister-in-law, that's really sad, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I would say he's the youngest of 6.
What about you, Stevie?
That is so weird that David Spade and Kate Spade
we're somewhat related. Yeah. Yes.
What
through
the fuck?
Marriage, yeah. Right? Still super sad. I will say, David Spade to me seems like the runt of the litter.
Yeah, it's
what he seems like. He seems like the runt became the most successful one. He just seems like the runt of the litter.
Whoever married Kate Spade probably did.
R.I.P. I'll say a youngest of nine.
You guys are both right. He's the youngest, but only the youngest of three. I feel like that's pretty remarkable. You both kind of hit that.
He seems youngest kid energy.
Two older brothers, too. Yeah. So that's kind of like having four older siblings overall.
He seems like the youngest.
But yeah, Stevie, you're the winner. And I got to kind of like unwrap this because I hid it in my bag. But as I'm pulling this out,
VHS?
Maybe Stevie can or Pappy can describe live.
So Josh is wearing a green t-shirt. This is Riverwood Pottery. He's in his backpack.
He's getting into pottery now.
He's getting the big zipper opening it up. He's got a gray back. Ooh, okay. Whoa. It's like wrapped in what appears to be some kind of flannel. It looks like it's rifle shaped.
Flannel is not part of.
Okay. Sweatshirt. It could be a.
Do you recognize
that's
this?
A trophy, boys. That is a basketball player.
So my wife teaches at the school. She's the gym teacher at the school that Pappy and Stevie used to go to. And they had some stuff she was getting rid of. And she found this from 2001, 2002. The fifth grade boys basketball championship trophy.
What? And both of our names are on it.
Yes, you both on the team.
Dude. No.
So, Stevie, I actually recognize a lot of these people just from having gone to Concord.
Dude, I gotta take a picture.
Take a picture of it with Stevie.
This is the coolest thing.
Dude, Stevie.
It's heavy, too. Look at this thing.
Hold on. Hold that towards the camera. That's incredible. Can you just get, this is a real truck. Can she just give this away?
They were going to, I guess, pitch it, guys. Like, it's sad.
Wait a second. What, they're just going to throw away our trophy?
So
zero losses.
Let's go, boys.
7-0. What position were you guys? Did you guys actually get some PT out there?
Bench.
Stevie, you're better than that.
Six man.
There you go.
Stevie was shooting threes back in the day.
Hell yeah, I could see
that. He was like a rifleman.
Okay, no, there's a misconception for that. Anybody from the state of Indiana can get a basketball at any point from where they're at and hit a three. It's just born into our blood.
Well, you were good at it.
But under pressure.
Yeah.
I can't see Pappy being
I was not
under pressure.
That's so sick.
This is
dude.
The coolest thing I've ever seen in my life.
I can't believe
sitting
that.
On that for a while.
It's heavy. Feel this thing. It's
back when they made trophies of real materials.
Wow.
Seven wins, zero losses. They even spelled my last name right.
Any of those names you'd like to read off there?
Matt, Jordan, Trevor, Andrew Fisher, Phil Jones, Ryan Stone, Kyle Narski, Tyree Larkin, Drew Malcolm, Brandon Plummel, Steve.
We can't edit these out.
Brian Rucco, Ryan Shepard.
Just every last name.
Nick Wells, David, Coach Dave Polson. Wow. Incredible.
Isn't that cool?
Incredible.
I don't know if you have a spot to put it, but...
Oh, I do.
Also, by the way, the trophies...
elementary school didn't. So, just a little explanation. Our school system, that we all live in the district, basically, now. Like, there's no 5th and 6th grade sports teams like this anymore because they all go to an intermediate building for 5th and 6th grade. So, like...
How do they fight? Yeah.
They have, like, intramurals. Oh. There's no, like... Oxbow doesn't play West Side for the championship anymore. It's weak. They just have like, it's sad.
Failed society.
So that's why they don't need the trophy anymore. Sadly, but I've been sitting on this for a while. I'm so happy to get it.
Can I tell you something crazy?
Dude, that's so sick.
This basketball team won by an average of like 40 points every game. It was
stacked.
This was the scariest team.
I might have to ask Brother Jordan about the veracity of that claim.
We smoked Brother Jordan. Kicked. Yeah.
Like he probably...
Did you guys repeat in 6th grade?
Yes.
Big time.
Average win of 40 points.
In 6th grade too?
Yes.
Are you sure?
We got... Find that trophy.
Was that trophy lost to time then? I don't know.
No, I think we beat Southside like 58-7.
Southside scrubs.
Our coach was running a full court press where we were up by 40. You had a...
Dude, that is so sick.
For those listening at home,
I just
like,
can't.
There were some of these kids that were like 6 feet tall in the fifth grade, and they were like literally just jumping on toddlers the entire time. It was horrifying.
The trophy is so beautiful too. It's got like an American flag pattern. Oh, it's got marble layers to it.
I mean, you got the griffins on the side. This is awesome. Yeah.
There's griffins, a guy dunking. It's a work of art. That's unbelievable.
This is like actually a craft. Yeah, they must have spent some money on this back in the day. It's a murder weapon.
That's so cool.
Stevie, the win is yours. You're the emperor of the new groove, and the trophy is yours too. Do you want to toss it off?
Still the Lord of the Ring too.
And Lord of the Rings.
I'm the Lord of the Lord of the Rings.
Do you want to toss it to Spoiler Man? And pitch... I don't know. It's all yours, buddy.
I really don't have a whole lot to say. I will say that if we ever do the new Roadhouse movie, that movie sucks.
We will someday.
But yeah. I do want to talk about it. That movie sucks. As much as I love Jake Gyllenhaal, it's not a good movie. There's this kind of this new fight kind of CGI they're doing that just looks incredibly hacky, and it's going to lead to a bunch of AI that looks awful. But other than that, thank you for listening. I'm so happy about this trophy. Thank you, Josh. This is so amazing. This is like one of my favorite. I might put this at my desk at work. I'm so excited. I'm just going to put this on at my desk at work. I'm really excited. So take it away, Spoilers, man. That was Spoilers.
Incredible. Incredible.
I was hoping you guys would actually.
That's the coolest thing I've ever seen.
That is so cool.
Special thank you to our patrons. Matt Troll.
That's very emotional.
Brother Brian.
So it was like two really intense goodbyes, one after the other.
Nephew Quinn.
He's behaved great.
Nick.
A gentleman and a grown-up.
The Meg.
And it's an emotional thing you have to get past.
Nurse Stacy.
Well, good luck, gentlemen.
The Wolf.
I know it must have been emotional for him.
Gabe.
Yeah, we'll track you down, whether you like it or not.
PK!
I know it must have been painful for him.
Spencer.
I think he admires or likes aspects of what we're doing.
Barky 420.
I feel like I've almost got to the top.
Swole.
So I'm having to raise the energy to try and do this again.
Cheese Zombie.
It's gone.
Sebastian.
My mind is on doing other things.
Dr. Lars.
And now I'm doing my album.
Stone Cold Austin.
It's not an ideal situation for me to be in.
Best Friend Drew.
I'm not a quitter.
Druid King.
Well, good luck, gentlemen.
Thank you.
I'm going to the inner lair.
If you'd like to request an episode, hear your name read by Spoiler Man, or even just help us make podcasts, please check us out on patreon.com/spoilerspodcast.
The thing was, Josh, is like they put the whole team on here, but not everybody was A-team.
Well, did some people like dress up for it, or is that the A-team and B-team
combined? A-team and B-team combined. Oh, really? Yeah. They only had, I think Mr. Poulsen only had 8 people on the A-team.
Was that sixth grade?
Yeah, Mr. Poulsen. What's that?
That was fifth grade or sixth grade?
Fifth grade.
It says fifth grade.
Yeah, so Matt Bennett was B-team, Jordan Burt was A-team, Trevor was A-team, Andrew Fisher was B-team, Phil Jones was B-team, Ryan Cohn was A-team, Kyle was A-team, Terry was A-team, Drew was B-team, Brand Pummel A-team, Stevie A-team. No, Tyree was A-team all day. Brighton Roberto, B-team. Ryan Shepard, B-team. Nick Wells, B-team. David Yoder, easily. David Yoder was like 6'1" in the fifth grade.
I almost said his name when you said some of these people were huge. I was going to go David.
Dude, David, like, he would get that ball and be like, and there's a kid guarding him this tall. And you're like, all right.
He was like a gym rat, too.
Dude, he was easily the most athletic kid in our grade. It was for every year we were alive. Apparition, spirit, demon, fantasy. Some of them are served with darkness, devil dancer. Watch the dying sunlight fade.
That was Spoilers.